Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, foreign ministers from Nigeria and neighboring countries meet in Abuja to discuss Boko Haram as the militants intensify their drive to seize land in the far northeast.
The original Boko Haram that we know in 2008 is exactly not what we have today. Today you now have a regimented force, you know, with a lot of sophisticated armament.
The international group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, warns that the world is losing the battle against Ebola epidemic that has claimed some 1,500 lives in four West African countries.
There are a number of other pressing concerns, but our message is we don't have the choice. We're going to have to deal with this no matter what happens elsewhere.
Also on the program, Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Tabane returns home after fleeing the country over the weekend after an apparent coup. So stay tuned.
Top story.
Foreign ministers from Nigeria and neighboring countries, as well as representatives from international organizations and foreign governments, met on Wednesday in Abuja to discuss Boko Haram as the Islamist militants continued their drive to seize more territory in the northeast, raising fears for regional security. The meeting followed reports that Boko Haram had captured the town of Bama in northeastern Nigeria, but authorities were quick to refute that claim. In a moment, we will hear from a correspondent in Abuja about the resolutions of the security meeting, but first, here's a report by Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Reports that Bama has fallen to Boko Haram have caused a lot of panic, especially in Maiduguri, the Borno State capital. Bama is the second largest town in the state, and it is only 75 kilometers from Maiduguri. Many believe Maiduguri will be the next target for Boko Haram, which appears to be bent on capturing as much territory as possible as part of the caliphate it recently declared. Dr. Sylvester Odion Ahene of the Lagos State University says one reason for Boko Haram's successes is its transformation over time.
The original Boko Haram that we know in 2008 is exactly not what we have today. 2008 was a group of, proselytizers led by one Mohammed Yusuf, who probably the best they could do was to use simple weapons, maybe to attack the police and all of that. But today you now have a regimented force, you know, with a lot of sophisticated armament. So this is much more beyond the protest group that we originally saw in 2009.
There are allegations that Boko Haram made this rapid transformation partially due to the support it gets from some highly placed Nigerians. What many Nigerians see as a credible confirmation of this came last week from Stephen Davis, the Australian negotiator the Nigerian government contracted to negotiate the release of the more than 200 schoolgirls taken hostage by Boko Haram in April. In interviews granted last week, Davis mentioned some key government officials and institutions as some of Boko Haram's sponsors. Many Nigerians, like Mayowa Adebola, are concerned that the Nigerian government has not given any response in spite of the gravity of the allegations.
It's been a week now. No official report from the presidency, from any government parastatals, and they're just quiet about it. It's just the same nonchalant attitude from the presidency and as people there. So I just think this is a very serious issue and nobody's saying anything.
The lack of a government response to claims that elements within the government are sponsoring Boko Haram has sparked calls in several quarters for the International Criminal Court to investigate the matter. Student Victoria Amadi supports this idea.
I support the call for the offenders to be brought to book and the involvement of the International Criminal Court. I support that too because of the extra judicial execution and then the killings. We are counting numbers. We don't know the death toll, how much that will be end up to be. Our government, it seems that there's a lot of things they are hiding from us. They need to be transparent and accountable.
But it seems President Goodluck Jonathan, who is expected to seek re-election next year, is more concerned about its political future than with a rebellion that has put the lives of millions of Nigerians in danger.
Sam Olukoya reporting from Lagos. Let's now hear from our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Shemang, who was at the security meeting that discussed ways of stopping the Boko Haram insurgency.
It's like taking stock, looking back, what has happened since the last met in France. And of course, that meeting gave birth to what they call the Regional Intelligence Fusion Unit. And they want to see how far this unit is going. Outside that, there was also the call that the multinational joint task force should be up and doing. And this task force has to do with Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. These are contiguous nations of the region where Boko Haram is very active in northeastern part of Nigeria.
Did this latest meeting produce any concrete results, especially in the area of foreign assistance for Nigeria in the fight against Boko Haram?
The Nigerian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ambassador Bashir Wali, is confident that the meeting brought some useful results, bearing in mind that they're now talking of sharing information, they're now talking of joint action, they're now talking of having some financial aid in terms of what they call Safe School Initiative in Nigeria. And again, they want to see that people actually return to their bases, bearing in mind that the United Nations Human Rights Commission is saying that in the last 3 weeks or so, there has been a very huge refugee problem in Cameroon, that about 10,000 Nigerians are in Cameroon and a few again in Niger Republic. So these are things they also want to handle.
Is there evidence of a will by regional governments in West Africa to collectively bring to an end the Boko Haram insurgency?
Yes, there is that will, bearing in mind that there is this multinational joint task force. These are soldiers from Niger, soldiers from Cameroon, Chad, and now with Nigeria, the contiguous nations. So they have contributed soldiers, they have contributed equipment. If you recall of recent, there were some attacks by Boko Haram in Nigeria, and Boko Haram insurgents were pushed. They went into Cameroon, and Cameroon gave them a very deadly blow because of this kind of joint operation. Outside that, they're talking of intelligence sharing. Any nation that has any intelligence that has to do with either financiers, a movement of Boko Haram, or equipment, hard military wares, or some people being kidnapped, information will have to be shared among all these countries. And interestingly, too, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation was also in this meeting. And we've seen them coming to renounce this kind of Islam as being practiced by Boko Haram.
There is criticism within Nigeria of the government's perceived failure to deal effectively with Boko Haram. What else can you tell us to this effect?
Well, Isaac, what I can say is it all depends on which side of the coin one is looking at it. The Nigerian government will believe it's doing its best. Some others will believe its best is not good enough. Some people will say, look, give the soldiers the equipment they want. They're ready to fight. And I want to tell you, Isaac, about a month ago, I was in that Sambisa forest. I saw soldiers in action. But whether the equipment they have enough is a different ballgame.
And I was speaking to Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
The United Nations coordinator for Ebola, Dr. David Nabarro, has said that the cost of getting supplies to West African countries to bring the Ebola crisis under control will be at least $600 million. His remarks follow a warning by the medical organization Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, that the world was losing the battle against Ebola. MSF also expressed concern that treatment centers in West Africa have been reduced to places where people go to die alone. The Ebola virus has now killed more than 1,500 people in Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria. Before we came on air, I spoke to Florian Westphal, the Director General of MSF in Germany, and I started by asking him what kind of reaction MSF had received since they expressed such strong criticism of the world's reaction to Ebola.
There's certainly been lots of expressions of concern, including at the UN meeting where our president spoke on Tuesday. But beyond that, we haven't heard anything much about any concrete actions that will now be undertaken to really try and tackle this crisis.
What did they say at the UN summit that contradicts your own statement?
I don't think there was necessarily anything said that contradicted our statement. I think actually, in many ways, especially also the United Nations representatives at the summit expressed pretty much the same sentiment. That's obviously very welcome that we all agree on the analysis of the problem and on the extent and the gravity of the problem. But really, at the end of the day, the gist of our message is that we've now all talked long enough and we now need to really start translating words and plans into actual action on the ground.
Can you put a figure on the number of extra medical staff needed?
It's difficult for me to put an absolute figure on the number of people that would be required, but we have to unfortunately assume that already now the real number of people infected with Ebola in Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea is much higher than was assumed. The WHO speaks possibly of as many as 20,000 people. MSF has deployed up to 200 international staff, more than 2,000 nationals of the countries concerned. We've been continuously expanding our capacity. And that really, since the crisis started in March in Guinea, we've been treating two-thirds of all patients who've come into centers. So that alone shows you how committed MSF has been to this crisis. But we've always, and since months though, also been saying that whatever we can do, it's not enough, and that we are also reaching the limits of the capacity of what we can do.
What about money? Does the fight against Ebola need something like the ice water challenge to motivate people to donate?
At the moment, money has not been the problem, at least not for Doctors Without Borders, for MSF. We've been able to work with the money we have received, and as always, we primarily rely on very generous support by the general public. What's really needed more than anything now are qualified expert medical staff who can staff isolation centers to help patients, who can operate mobile laboratories so that we can actually test the blood to see whether the patient has Ebola or not, and also people who can help us transport staff and materials into the region and inside the region, because as you may have heard, a number of airlines have actually suspended their flights.
Well, it's good to hear that at least you have the money to carry out your work. Now, do you think the international community is more concerned by events taking place elsewhere, like in Syria or Iraq and Ukraine, and is now giving lesser attention to Ebola?
It's pretty clear that there are a lot of serious crises going on simultaneously in the world. But we would like to stress that this situation, Ebola in West Africa, has now really assumed exceptional proportions and is extremely lethal. If no action is taken right now within the next 3 months, we're really looking at something that is going to get ever worse and affect more and more people. So yes, there are a number of other pressing concerns. But our message is we don't have the choice. We're going to have to deal with this no matter what happens elsewhere.
I was speaking to Florian Westphal, the Director General of MSF in Germany. And you are listening to Africa Link program coming to you straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany.
Behind the headlines.
Let's now head to Ghana, where the sale and use of counterfeit medicines is causing concern. In the country's marketplaces, it is a common scene to see hawkers peddling all sorts of fake medication for different ailments. It is against that background that the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana has stepped up efforts to curb this vice. Through educating the public, it hopes that patients will be soon able to buy medicine safe in the knowledge that it comes from authorized dealers. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi sent this report.
I bought Postinor 2 from one shop in town, which is more like an emergency contraceptive. Unknown to me, it was not correct. It was inferior or more like fake drug, which when I took it, it didn't work.
That's Belinda Teddy, one of the latest victims of fake drugs in Ghana. Belinda was confident she would not be pregnant after taking a contraception pill. A month later, she is still in shock after discovering she is expectant.
When you take it, you will not know that it's fake or not. After a week that I still experience those pregnancy symptoms, I realize that no, the drug didn't work.
Belinda's experience and that of many other medicine users prompted the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana to team up with M-Pedigree, a technological company. The two institutions have begun rolling out an initiative to assist drug consumers detect counterfeit medicine. All that patients or buyers of medicine need is a mobile phone. The phones can be used to text manufacturing codes on drugs to designated short codes, which then verify whether that drug is authentic or fake. Salome Brantier works with M-Pedigree and explains further how the system works.
Process takes nothing more than 20 seconds because you are looking at the fact that they take the pack, they scratch the code that is on the pack, text it to a designated short code, and within about 5 to 7 seconds, they get a reply telling them whether it's fake or original, and then they make their decision right there.
But not everybody is impressed with this technology. Thomas Amejo, head of Drug Surveillance Unit of Ghana's Food and Drugs Authority, FDA, says M-Pedigree's system has serious loopholes.
This technology essentially is about authenticating the origin of the medicine. But then, if that manufacturer puts in a substandard medicine or a counterfeit medicine, then you just authenticate a wrong medicine. It is no guarantee. There is no way that technology can ascertain the quality of the medicine that, or the safety of the medicines that you are consuming.
The FDA official says his organization is developing new strategies to protect consumers against fake or substandard drugs.
I talk about handheld devices. Very soon we'll be acquiring some. We've already had one in the system. We are acquiring more, which our teams, when we are going on surveillance exercises, will hold, and they can assess on the spot, make quick decisions before they do confirmatory tests in the lab. That is a plus for us. We are even doing training for our staff on intelligence gathering because, you know, globally, it has become a very lucrative trade.
Meanwhile, M-Pedigree isn't worried about the skepticism about its new initiative. Salome Brantier says cases of patients suffering as a result of taking substandard drugs will be a thing of the past.
Ultimately, our role is to make sure that the first point of doubt, which is usually about 90% of the problem, is taken care of, which is the authenticity of the package of the medicine.
Intense educational campaigns are being conducted by M-Pedigree and the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana to encourage people to embrace the new technology. This, they hope, will help stop the circulation of counterfeit drugs on the Ghanaian market.
That was Isaac Kaleche reporting from Accra.
What's new? What's interesting? What matters? Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Tabane has returned home after fleeing the mountainous kingdom to neighboring South Africa on Saturday. At the time, he said the military had staged a coup, a charge it denied. Since then, there has been civil unrest in Lesotho that is linked to a struggle between Tabane, reportedly supported by the police, and Deputy Prime Minister Motejoa Metsing, said to have the loyalty of the army. Well, to put all this into context, I spoke to Dimfo Motsamai, an expert on Lesotho at the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria, South Africa, and I first asked her whether peace was in sight now that the Premier is back in the country.
Not necessarily, for the simple reason that the security situation in Maseru, its capital, remains precarious. Reports are that there is still some military presence in the capital. The police stations remain inoperable, with top police officers having fled the country after the military disarmed them last week. The country also currently doesn't have a police force. This is a very big problem, obviously, with the military army chief running hammock in Maseru. The other issue here is that it is not only the personal security of the Prime Minister that we have to be concerned about. There is about 150 Lesotho government officials who have been in hiding since the events of last week, and their security also remains a big issue.
Is there any sort of power struggle going on in Maseru?
Absolutely. There is different kinds of power struggles going on. The first is the power struggle between the prime minister and the deputy prime minister. The second power struggle has to do with the relationship between the prime minister, Thomas Tabani, and the commander of the Lesotho Defense Force, who he had fired last week. The recently fired Gamudi did not recognize that decision by the prime minister. And in fact, Gamudi had been undermining the authority of the prime minister for a couple of months now. The third power struggle has to do with Gamudi and his replacement, Brigadier Maparango Mahao. It is also important to note that in the fracas that happened last weekend, Gamudi loyalists also ransacked the home of his replacement. And then the last maybe power struggle to identify here is that of the army chief, Gamudi, and the police chief. Because as I have already mentioned, they had taken over and disarmed the police stations around Maseru, including the headquarters of the police. And the police chief right now is in hiding.
How strong is the three-party ruling coalition? I mean, if someone said it is shaky, would they be right?
I wouldn't say it is shaky. I would use stronger words. I would say it has collapsed.
Is SADC playing an active role in trying to resolve the impasse in Lesotho in so much as it intends to send an observation team?
Absolutely. I think President Zuma had been playing an active role in trying to caution against the lawlessness of the security apparatus there. The problem, however, is that the focus on political dialogue, which is a good focus because nobody has an appetite for a military, you know, intervention. The problem, however, is that it may be not as fitting with the developments, the security and political developments on the ground.
What will happen to the members of the military who staged the alleged coup or fracas, if you will?
It remains to be seen. I've always maintained that this is not a coup. It's anarchy and it's actions that are treasonable in nature. That's a big question mark of which government is going to preside over addressing that issue of what will happen to Gamudi and what will happen to people that supported him. Nothing might happen to them if there's a change of government. That's my field.
I was speaking to Dimfo Motsamai from the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria, South Africa, on the political situation in Lesotho.
Opinion.
And in our opinion slot this week, we go back to our top story. Foreign ministers from West African countries, as well as international representatives, met in Abuja, Nigeria, to discuss the threat posed by Boko Haram in the region. We now ask, do you think sufficient steps have been made in terms of intelligence gathering by Nigeria and its neighbors? Send us your thoughts in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
It's almost time to go, but let me leave you with a reminder of the main stories we've covered. Foreign ministers from Nigeria and neighboring countries meet in Abuja to discuss Boko Haram as the militants' drive to seize more land intensifies in the far northeast. The international group Doctors Without Borders, MSF, warns that the world is losing the battle against Ebola epidemic that has claimed some 1,500 lives in four West African countries. We've also been hearing about the civil unrest in Lesotho after an alleged coup by the military over the weekend. And just to remind you, this is one way you can comment on the stories that we've covered. Send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code +49160-957-59510. You can also visit our website for more news and feature stories. That is dw.de/Africa. And Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time. And from Bonn, I'm Isaac Mukabi saying take care.